Hello, hello. Welcome to the sixth episode of the Global Trends and Diplomacy podcast. My name is Katarzyna Rybka-Iwańska, and I say hi to you from Tel Aviv. I'm proud to serve at the Polish Embassy here and record this podcast in my private capacity and my spare time, which I rarely have. I have recently observed that there is one particular article that systematically climbs up the ladder of popularity on my website. Quite surprisingly, it is a blog post about animals. Today, it's already the fifth most popular piece on rybkaiwańska.com. Well, you seem to really like pandas, koalas, and platypuses. Therefore, especially for you, I decided to explore the topic of animal diplomacy in more detail and record a podcast about it. Give a hug to your cat, dog, spider, or any other puppet and have a listen. Animals have been used as diplomatic gifts for thousands of years. They are elements of soft power in the purest form. Animals are symbols of power, like lions or bears, strength, like elephants or horses, or beauty, like exotic birds. They help to underline the meaning of official visits and diplomatic relations between a giver and a receiver. Often, they turn into a hobby of rich and spoiled monarchs and other rulers. For instance, archaeologists found skeletons of large dogs in Iron Age burial sites near Uppsala in Sweden. They are considered diplomatic gifts between rich families of the time. Giraffes had been used in diplomacy in Egypt since the ancient times, through the medieval ages and later on. They went as far as to Samarkand as a gift to Tamerlane in the 14th century, or to King George IV of England in the 19th century. It is also said that Cleopatra has given one to Julius Caesar. Romans called it cameleopard, as they thought it was a strange mixture of a camel and a leopard. Sadly, the animal did not live long in Rome. Julius Caesar had the giraffe torn to pieces by lions in an arena, probably just to underline its utmost power. Charlemagne loved wild animals and therefore received monkeys, camels, falcons, and many other creatures that he put into his private menageries. He was even presented with an Asian elephant named Abul Abbas by the Caliph of Baghdad, Harun al-Rashid. As it was understood, the larger, the fiercer, or more rare the animal, the higher its prestige. 400 years needed to pass to have another elephant enter the diplomatic scene in Europe. The Cremona elephant, known after one of Italian cities and the chronicles that mention the animal, was presented to the Holy Roman Emperor, King Frederick II of Sicily, by Sultan of Egypt Al-Kamil in 1229. Even more interestingly for our story, there are manuscripts on falconry written by Emperor Frederick. The emperor loved these birds. In a few parts of the manuscript, one can read also about cockatoos, described as talking parrots, gifts from the already mentioned Sultan of Egypt. Interestingly, these particular cockatoos live only in Australia, New Guinea, and Indonesia. This means that merchants had to travel that far, yes, even to Australia in the mid-13th century. Now, coming back to Europe, in the 13th century, King Henry III of England transformed the Tower of London into a menagerie of animals he received as gifts. For instance, three lions or leopards were sent by the Holy Roman Emperor Frederick II. Yes, the fan of falcons and cockatoos, underlying unity after marrying King Henry III's sister. The monarch received also an African elephant from Louis IX, the King of France, and a polar bear from Haakon IV, the King of Norway. It is said that the polar bear used to swim in the Thames and catch fish. Further kings have invested in the expansion of the menagerie in the Tower of London. Sometime later, in the 16th century, in another part of Europe, an Indian rhinoceros was most probably presented to Sebastian I of Portugal by the viceroys of India, as only the second animal of this species reaching the European soil. The first one, or the first one since the Roman times, as some sources say, was supposed to be presented by Manuel I of Portugal to Pope Leo X, but unfortunately died in a shipwreck near Italy in 1516. King Manuel I presented Pope Leo X also with at least one another animal, the pet white elephant named Hanno. Hanno soon became Pope's favorite animal. Poets used to write poems about him. The Pope himself wrote an epitaph when Hanno passed away. There was also another animal that poets of the time wrote about, and others were painting frescoes. A few decades before the rhinoceros story, a sensational giraffe came to Florence in 1487, probably as a gift from Al-Ashraf Katbai, the Burji Sultan of Egypt, to Lorenzo de' Medici. The Medici menagerie was rich in exotic animals, but as for giraffes, well, they had just a giant mannequin in the entertainment section. Unfortunately, the giraffe's fate was not very pleasant. The animal broke its neck shortly after the arrival to Florence, as its head got stuck in the beams of stables built specially, but not very professionally, for it. It is said that since then Europe had not seen these animals until 1827, when three Nubian giraffes were given by Mehmet Ali Pasha, an Albanian Ottoman commander, to George IV of the United Kingdom, Francis II, Emperor of Austria, and Charles X of France. Sadly, only one of these giraffes survived more than 2 years on the European soil. Today, the issue of care over animals, the conditions they live in, and the way they are treated are much more important, also when the image of royals and politicians are concerned. For instance, when Martin Van Buren, the 8th US president, received 2 tiger cubs from the Sultan of Oman, the Congress immediately made him donate the animals to one of American zoos. And another example. The UK royal family is known for their passion for horses. There is an anecdote that once Princess Anna was to receive an Arab horse from the King of Saudi Arabia. Unfortunately, at that time, due to an epidemic, all the animals brought into the UK were supposed to go through a lengthy and tiring quarantine. Obviously, also the royal gifts had to submit to these regulations. Princess Anna did not want the horse to suffer anyhow and returned the gift. Neither the king nor his services checked the situation before presenting the gift. Well, they should have. Usually, animal gifts, especially exotic species, are donated to state zoos. It does not mean, though, that the custom or tradition of presenting animals is dying. It only means that the issue needs to be handled with care. Probably the most popular animal diplomacy of the contemporary times is the one of China, that has been developing its panda diplomacy with an utmost care. Using panda bears as diplomatic gifts is not a communist idea. There is a proof that a pair of giant pandas were sent by the Empress Wu Zetian in the 7th century to the Emperor of Japan. The communist regime refreshed the idea in the 1950s when 2 pandas were sent to the Moscow Zoo to underline the good relations between communist China and the USSR. The most headline example took place when the US President Richard Nixon, after his groundbreaking visit to Beijing in 1972, received 2 giant pandas, Xing Xing and Ling Ling. Pandas lived in the Smithsonian's National Zoo in Washington, D.C. Pandas were also presented to the then President of France, Georges Pompidou, the then Prime Minister of the UK, Edward Heath, and many others. In 1982, Chinese government decided to stop giving and start renting giant pandas due to the scarcity of the animal in 10-year-long loans. It did not diminish the popularity of the gift, though. Australia has followed the Chinese pattern and has been developing its koala diplomacy. It is put into force at least since the G20 summit in Brisbane, when pictures of President Barack Obama hugging a koala made the headlines. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Australia is said to have a manual on animal diplomacy, and Julie Bishop, the then Minister of Foreign Affairs of Australia, in 2016 ranked koala cuddling first among other soft power strategies that help build a stronger, connected and more prosperous region. Australia uses also other animals as diplomatic gifts. For instance, Prince George of Great Britain received crocodiles from the Australian government. Also, 4 marsupials were sent to Singapore for half a year in order to celebrate the 50th anniversary of diplomatic relations between Australia and Singapore. Now, coming back to China, Beijing is not only an animal giver, but also a receiver. On many occasions, the leaders of Communist China have received elephants from their southern and southeastern Asian counterparts. Ho Chi Minh, the then leader of Vietnam, has sent elephants to Mao Zedong on various occasions in 1953 and 1960. Sirimavo Bandaranaike, the then Prime Minister of Sri Lanka, sent an elephant to the Chinese children in 1972. Further 2 Sri Lankan elephants were sent in 1979. Other Asian animals often used as diplomatic gifts to China include Turkmen Akal Teke horses. The Chinese leaders were given these tremendous animals, Jiang Zemin in 2000, Hu Jintao in 2006, and Xi Jinping in 2014. Asia itself is rich in exotic, unique animals. Probably the most outstanding examples include the gift of Komodo dragons, national animals of Indonesia, presented by President Suharto to Lee Kuan Yew of Singapore in the 1980s, to Ronald Reagan in 1986, and to George H.W. Bush in 1990. Dragons given to President Reagan were donated to the National Zoo in Washington, D.C., while those given to President Bush to the Cincinnati Zoo. They were touristic hits. Naga, one of Bush's dragons, was visited by over 1 million of people every single year and also went on tour visiting 10 other zoos in the US. American presidents were given also many other interesting animals while serving their country. For example, George Washington was given an Andalusian donkey by King Charles III of Spain. President John Quincy Adams received an alligator from the Marquis de Lafayette. The animal lived later in the bathtub in East Room. Theodore Roosevelt had many pets and animals, including a laughing hyena, a gift from the Emperor Menelik II of Ethiopia. Some leaders are genuinely fond of animals, like Vladimir Putin, who adores dogs and often conducts the dog diplomacy. Boyko Borisov has taken advantage of Mr. Putin's passion and gave him a big Karakachan puppy that is now called Buffy and lives in the home of the Russian president. Interestingly, President George W. Bush also received a dog from Bulgaria. Russia is good at animal diplomacy. Dmitry Medvedev, the Russian Prime Minister, has given a Siberian kitten to the then Finnish President Tarja Halonen in 2013. Mr. Halonen was widely known for his love for cats and his sadness after his 2 cats died. A few decades earlier, Russia, or rather the communist leader, climbed the top of dog diplomacy. After a small talk type conversation with Jacqueline Kennedy about Strelka, one of the first dogs that were sent by the USSR into space and came back alive, Nikita Khrushchev sent the first family of the US Strelka's puppy daughter, called Pushinka, who became the family's favorite animal of all. But Russia uses dogs in its diplomacy also in a very, very different manner. Once, former US President George W. Bush revealed the anecdote about his dog, a Scottish Terrier named Barney. When Barney was introduced to President Putin, the latter said, "You call that a dog?" 1 year later, the Bush family visited Mr. Putin at his dacha near Moscow, when Mr. Putin's huge hound, much bigger than the terrier, was introduced. Mr. Putin was supposed to say, "Would you like to meet my dog? He's bigger, stronger, and faster than Barney." Probably the same dog was used by Mr. Putin at another occasion. Some years ago at Sochi talks on energy, President Vladimir Putin welcomed Angela Merkel with his black Labrador, Connie. Mr. Putin knew very well that Madame Chancellor was afraid of dogs at least since she was bitten by one in the mid-1990s. The Russian leader clearly wanted to intimidate Ms. Merkel and said, "I'm sure it will behave itself. It doesn't need journalists, after all." Well, the episode was rich, wasn't it? If only could I would include more and more examples. The history knows so many of them, including camels given to President Hollande in Mali or bison given by President Wałęsa to President Mitterrand. I could probably go on and on with many different examples of the usage of animals in public diplomacy. Nevertheless, let's stop here and reflect on the richness of the source of ideas that animals provide. They can and are used in many different manners, not exclusively as gifts. Traditional diplomacy is so last season, so the sky's the limit. You decide what you do. Yet, the bar is set very high and requires a broad imagination. Since the majority of the countries cannot use Komodo dragons or giant pandas as a way to soften some hearts and win some minds, they have to be smart. For instance, the Czechs once presented Barack Obama with a bowl for his dog and were awed for the gesture by the president, his family and the media. Dogs are like family members in America, so the Czech present was a hit. Most importantly, if you decide to use animals in diplomacy, make sure that none of them suffers during your diplomatic endeavors. Seriously, seeing your animal harmed anyhow would probably be the last day of your career, and would and should cause you sleepless nights. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Global Trends and Diplomacy podcast. Hope you enjoyed it and learned new things. I did while preparing this episode for you. Now, what a coincidence. Today is my birthday and the International Podcast Day. I didn't know it when I started podcasting, but now I have just no other choice. I will celebrate today, but from tomorrow on, I will do even more to become a pro at podcasting. We, podcasters, are a niche bunch of people. Still, we love what we do, and hopefully you can hear it also in my broadcasts. I'll be very, very grateful if you provide me with some feedback. Please tell me what you think of my podcast. What are your favorite episodes? What are the topics you'd like me to cover? Where should I place more emphasis? What should I do to turn my podcast more and more helpful and useful to you all? For now, let's keep in touch and stay tuned. And obviously, let's celebrate the International Podcast Day. Bye-bye.